talking about studying the Bible, and we were talking about why Bible study is often neglected. Last week, we discussed it's neglected because sometimes we just take the preacher's word for it and go on. And that some say they can't get anything out of the Bible. They don't understand it. Which brings us to the next point, is some say they don't have time. You know, this little bitty section here that talks about people say they don't have time for church, time for God, I could preach a whole sermon on. But the problem is, the people that need to hear it ain't here. And I keep something like this in the back of my head, and sometimes they'll be here. And you're going to hear this again when it happens. I don't know when it'll be. But I do that occasionally. How do you deal with this excuse? I don't have time. We have about 75 people on our road here as far as people who claim to be a part of our congregation. Last year, we may have hit that mark 3 times throughout the year. And it wasn't even those folks who came then, it's actually visitors who came from other places. I have very little sympathy, and I have very little time to deal with people like this. Because it's nothing more than an excuse. You know, I've had people come up to me. Well, you know, we didn't get up in time this morning. We were late getting in bed last night. You know, we had to go to Aunt Susie's and we had to do a family reunion there. And we had to go over here. And we had to do that. We were late getting home. We just didn't get up in time to get to church. And like Mary just said, they'll get up in plenty of time to be to work Monday morning. And if there's a ball game that starts at 6 o'clock, they're going to be well on time for that. And I get some ugly looks from people when I make that statement in the pulpit. Let me tell you, and y'all don't know this. I can see everything that goes on out here when I'm up there. You know, I see it all. And a lot of people don't know that. They'll give me those frowns and those looks when I say something that they don't like. They think I don't see that, but I do. Like I say, I have no sympathy, and I have no time for people like that, because they're simply doing nothing more than offering excuses. You know, I have a busy life too. I don't think anyone, and a lot of people think, well, you're a preacher, you don't have a busy life. There ain't nothing much going on in your life, buddy. Walk a mile in my shoes. That's all I'm going to say. Walk a mile in my shoes. You'll find out different. Everybody has busy lives. Everybody has things to pop up unexpectedly. Everybody has to prioritize importances in life and make their list of what's tops on my list and what and we work our way down. And we find too often that people who claim to be followers of God do not put God near the top. Instead, they put God closer to the bottom because there are other things that just simply get in the way. And it's right. That's a cop-out. It's a cop-out. And you know, the thing of it is, you know, I don't think that's the reason they do it. Well, the main reason they do it, I think, is because they know what's going to happen if they don't. If you go, if you show up to work late every day and you can't get there on time, what's going to happen? You're not going to have a job. Exactly. It is the same thing, but that's the thing you can't make people see. They don't see the end of this tunnel. They don't see the neglecting God and neglecting the church. They don't see what's at the end of that tunnel. I mean, they know it's there. They understand. They're not, you know, if they have been brought up and taught correctly, they know what's going to happen to those who neglect God. It's just that they put that on the back burner. They never give it a thought. But they understand Monday morning, if they don't show up at work, they could lose their job. That much they understand. Well, and that's true too. And that's it exactly. You never expect those unexpected things to happen to you. They always happen to somebody else. And until they happen to you, that's true. It always happens to somebody else. But sooner or later, it's going to happen to you. Okay? I won't argue with that point. Well, or anything that can take your mind off of what it needs to be. You know, I have seen kids that could quote any statement from a TV sitcom, that can quote a statement from a movie that they've seen, but could not quote Jesus wept from the Bible, or anything constructive from their schoolwork. They could not quote anything that's constructive from their schoolwork, but they have the capability of retaining anything that they want to retain. But it's just, what do they want to retain? That's what it comes down to. These kids that you're talking about, they could probably quote those TV shows they watch instead of things that they need to be able to remember and put to memory. Now, and that's it. That's it exactly. Well, you know, with mature adults, it's really difficult. With young people, you can show them what hard work results can be. Give them that example, one, with young people. With mature adults, it's almost impossible because the mindset is already there, and they're not looking to make a change. So I don't know. I don't really know anything that you can do with adults. And like I say, people don't see mistakes in themselves; they see them in other people. And until it happens to them, they don't understand. Well, this can't happen to me until it does, and then it's too late. You know, a lot of things we can do. One thing we could do is try to impress upon people that verses such like Matthew 6:33 actually work. What does Matthew 6:33 say? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And then there's a promise after that. All things will be added. Now, has anybody ever had that happen to them? Has anybody in here, did everybody here practice this? And seen the results of this? I mean, you know, if you put God first, things happen. And it happens in the right way. People who ignore God, neglect God, stay away from God. Oh, you know, you may find physical things to your good. You know, for example, and this may not be a good example, for those who don't give to the church, they can take their money and go buy a new car, a new boat, do whatever they want to, and they can have a good time with it, can't they? But they are laying up for themselves treasures where? On earth. Now, what's going to happen to that boat? Well, if you ride with Jack Lewis, he leaves a plug out and you may sink. I'd throw that in, Jack. Get him to tell you that story. But you know, you can do that, yeah. You may be able to reap some temporary benefits from that and some things that you like, personal gain and whatnot, but it's all for nothing, folks. Now, all of us sitting in this room understand this, don't we? What we're looking for, when we come here and we're looking for something, we're not looking for ways to get something physically new. We're looking for spiritual security. And we have that through God. We have that. Those who are outside of this room don't have that. It's something that we know that is more important than going out and buying a new car or going out and buying a new pair of pants or a new dress. If we seek God first, the other things are going to happen. And if you actually practice this, you'll be amazed how true that actually is. Sure. is so true. So how do you deal with people who say they don't have time? You try to teach them to prioritize importances. That's really the only thing that you can do. Yeah. Pray that they will open their eyes to see a need to change something about themselves. Okay. You know, there's really no excuse for neglecting the Word of God. As a matter of fact, you know, Solomon says that it is a foolish man who will reject the wisdom of the Lord. So, the only way we can overcome that is to gain in knowledge and understanding. And if you learn to understand something, you learn to appreciate it, don't you? You know. And that's what Bible study is all about. Comments on that? All right, let's move on. Okay? Well, I don't think he looks favorably at that lifestyle. And I'm not sure that he answers those prayers. Someone who takes on what you have described as what you call lackadaisical Christianity. You know, we're a lazy Christian. We want the name, we want our name on the roll book in heaven, but we just want to go there. We don't want to work at it. We don't want to do what is necessary and become dedicated. We just want to float. Yeah. The lukewarm Christian. That's the Laodicean. Yeah. Now, and if you'll go over and turn over there in Revelation chapter, I think this will be in chapter 3. Jesus describes those as poor and wretched generation. So, they have put themselves in a situation that God is absolutely not going to accept. You know, there's no such thing what's the word I'm looking for here? That's one way of putting it. There's a word I'm looking for, and it's not coming to me. Either you're growing or you're dying. You're never level. You're never staying still. There's no such thing as staying still in Christian growth. There's no such thing as staying still in physical growth. Either you're moving forward or you're going backward. And I question that fact as well. I never will forget a statement that a friend of mine, matter of fact, it was the preacher that married Pat and I, the preacher that baptized me as a teenager. He made this statement on one occasion. Deathbed confessions are generally done in panic. Deathbed confessions are only good if you go ahead and die. Now, you think about that for a minute. If a deathbed confession will work, God needs to go ahead and take you, because good chance if you get well, you're going to forget God all over again. And that was his point exactly. A deathbed confession is a confession of panic, and it's not sincere. You're not going to stay with it. You're going to go back to the way you was if you get well. And that's why he said deathbed confession only work if you go ahead and die. If they're going to work, that's how they're going to work. So, and there's probably a lot of truth in that. Exactly. And you know, we uproot the apple cart. You don't want And you know, that's another thing that a lot of people will do, just enough to get by with. All right, let's go back to what Merlene talked about in study, like in television. You put your mind on so many other things, and then when you realize you have to do something, you do just enough to get by. Most students, and I'll say most students are this way because they probably are, when they're studying for a test in school, they're not looking to get 100. They're looking to get, what is the minimum now, 70? They're looking to get a 70. That's all they care about. You know, and I've heard my own kids say it in their college work, well, if I can just get a B. I don't want a B. I want an A. You know, but you're settling for something less when you shouldn't have to settle. You know, we are on track to have the greatest thing that could possibly be. So many people want to settle. You know, there's a song that my daddy and I used to sing a lot because he was a big bluegrass fan. And there's a bluegrass song that says, just give me a cabin in the corner of glory land. Anybody ever heard that song? And of course, now the point that is trying to be made, let me get there. That was the point. Just let me get inside the gate. But when you stop and think about that, I don't want a cabin in the corner of glory land. I want the mansion like everybody else is going to get. I don't want to settle for something less. You like that corner? Yeah, I do too. I want to be in the middle of it. Yeah. Oh, man. Right. Well, God's not going to accept a dead Christian. I preached that sermon here. Have y'all heard that? Okay. I mean, I've got a sermon on the three lost objects, and that's one of the things that I talk about. Have I not preached that here? Okay. I can do it again? Okay. Kathy. Absolutely, because the man who went to work near the end of the day, he worked. He done his job. Yeah. Right. When you think about that concept, the older brother, the prodigal son, the 12th hour worker as opposed to the first hour worker. Let's say that we're all first hour workers and we're all elder brothers. And the prodigal comes home and he gets the same reward. Okay, the reward is utopia. The reward is heaven. What has he taken away from you, the prodigal son? What has he taken away from you? Absolutely nothing. You're going to get the same reward. You're going to get the perfection, the utopia that God has promised you. Now, if your Christian mind has the right mindset, you are going to be thrilled that someone who was out in sin and came in later in their life found the way. It is a soul that Satan did not get. And anytime you become jealous of someone who has become a Christian late in life, you are angry because Satan got him. You're wanting, or because Satan didn't get him. You're wanting. You're basically saying, I wish that man was lost. That's what you're saying. Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, the elder brother acts like the typical Christian, don't he? He does all the same things that the typical Christian does. You know, even to play the blame game, he blamed Dad because he's done this, because this has happened. Yeah. Sad. All right, what else? Well, we've dug a hole in this one. All right, let's move on. Methods of Bible study. Is there more than one way? Oh yeah. Let's think back for a little bit. Let's go back to high school. Is there more than one kind of test to take in school? You know, you had your essay questions. You had your multiple choice. You had your fill in the blank. You had the true and false. What was your favorite? The true and false? Multiple choice is the answer, kids. I'm going to tell you. Because if you've done any study at all, the right answer's there. You just got to recognize it, you know. That was always my favorite. Now, when I got into college, I'm going to chase this rabbit. When I got into college, I had a guy who believed in nothing but essay questions. And he would give you four questions, and you could choose whatever you wanted to write about. And it was, you had to write about whatever the question was. I found myself to be very, very good at that. Because, folks, I can shoot the breeze with the best of them. And I laid it on so thick. As a matter of fact, I made an A on a test, one of those questions. And he called me to his desk, and he said, I just want you to know this is the biggest load of guff I have ever seen in my life. But it was so good, I had to give you a good grade. So I found myself to be very good at that kind of test. But there's different ways of taking tests, and there's different ways of learning. I found memorization does not work for me. I have very, very little memory power. You know, I had to learn, you know, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? I couldn't tell you what Romeo said after that. You know, I don't know. And I read it so many times, you know. I am not good at memory work. So memory work is not the way I do it. You know, I have to find another method. Okay? And thankfully there are other methods of learning. So what you need to do is figure out the best method for you to study. I got two or three here that actually I've got three here that might be helpful. First of all, planned lesson studies. It's sort of that, which is what this study we're doing right now. We have taken a theme, closer walk with God, and we're actually discussing things that we can do to help us walk closer with God. And it's a different type of method. You prepare on a subject. You know that this is the aim, to find out how to walk closer to God. So you use this as a template, and then you start discussing different ways to help you move closer and closer to God. And that's what we've been doing in this study. You know, and it's a good way to study, because it'll give you a broad picture, you might say. An umbrella picture, you might say. How to be close to God would be an umbrella picture. You can put all different things inside of an umbrella. Let me give you an example of an umbrella word. Adultery is an umbrella word. Now, how many Bible topics could fall under that umbrella word of adultery? Well, the word itself, adultery, fornication, incest, all of which is taught from the Scriptures. It's all part of that umbrella word. So you can take an umbrella word, a subject, an umbrella subject, and just kind of pile up inside of it different things that have to do with that. And that's one way of remembering things. And it's a good way to study. One similar to it is subject method. For example, baptism. We want to study about baptism. It is more than just stepping down in the water, dunk, you're done. A lot more to it than that, isn't it? There's a lot of different ways that people have, over the ages, have baptized. Now, we know there's one true baptism, don't we? We understand that it is immersion for the forgiveness of sin. All that's got to be brought out. You also, in learning how to do something, you also need to learn how not to do something. And that would fall under a topic like that. Are there ways that you're not supposed to baptize that you know that are wrong? Give me an example. Sprinkling. Okay. Where did sprinkling come from? How did it begin? Does anybody really know? There was an English king in about the 8th or 9th century who wanted to be a Christian, but he was sick and he could not go under the water. So the church leaders of that day said, "We will sprinkle water on him until he gets well, and then we will immerse him." That's where sprinkling actually began. Okay, because it was something that a person could not do because of health, and then found out later that he had to wait till later and then do it right. And that hooked on, and people took it and ran with it. And today it is actual, probably more sprinkling than immersions going on in the religious world today because of that. Yeah, and the infants, that's a whole different thing. Is the infants born with sin? Of course they're not. But you'll find that a very vast majority of the religious world says yes, they are. And baptism is the way you get rid of it. And of course, you don't want to take an infant and dunk him under the water. You might kill him. So you sprinkle a little water on him and do the very same thing. Yeah. And again, all that comes under a subject study. And that's, again, it's a great way to learn, a great way to understand. And then the way we do it right now on Wednesday nights, and sometimes I do it here on Sunday mornings, the book method, where you take a single book of the Bible and go book, chapter, and verse and study it in that form. That's probably as close to memory work as I can get. Okay? And it's a very, very good way of study. Right now, we are involved on Wednesday night in what I think is one of the most interesting books in the Bible. Story of Esther. Boy, I mean, it's just, that would make a good TV show. Esther would make a good TV show, you know, because it would really grab your attention. I love it. You know, we have done plays on it at other churches that I've worked with. We did a VBS play on Esther, and we actually acted out the Esther story, and it was great. It's a wonderful story, and it's a great way to study. So, you know, three ways. That's three different methods of how to study the Bible. And none of them are, I don't think one is really better than the other. It's what you can attune yourself to. Because every one of us have a different way of learning, a different way of understanding. Our Bible correspondence course, and it's interesting, it'll start you out as if you absolutely know nothing. Matter of fact, the first lesson is God. That's it. You know, and it's how it starts. It starts at the very beginning. Right. Exactly. And it will bring you through what you need to know as far as scriptures are concerned. If you've never seen it, I'll be glad to give you a copy of it. It is a wonderful study. It'd be a great class study, really, when you stop and think about it. It would be a great class study to have to do. Maybe we can put one together for you. Okay. Right. Do any of y'all follow the daily Bible reading part that I give out at the beginning of the year? I do. I've been doing this for years and years now. It is a good way to study the Bible. It'll take you through the Bible in a year's period of time. And every time you read it, you're going to pick up on something you haven't picked up on before. It's sort of like you watch your favorite TV show or you watch your favorite movie, you watch it a second time, you're going to pick up on something you didn't see the first time. If you read through the scriptures, you're going to pick up on something you didn't catch the first time you read it. That's why repetition works. And I'm a firm believer in repetition. And Bible study is a great thing to put repetition into practice with. It will allow you to hear it over and over again. And by hearing it over and over again, you do gain a greater understanding of what it's actually trying to tell you. It's just like any other study of any other subject. You know, when you went to school and they told you for the very first time that 1 + 1 = 2, you know, you probably forgot that when you went home at the end of the day. So when you got back the next day, the teacher told it to you again and repeated it until it was in your mind and you learned it. Now it's a part of you. That's something you'll never forget. But you didn't remember it the first time it was told to you. I've had parents argue with me when we use repetition in our Bible studies here. And as everywhere that I've ever worked with, we've used repetition in our Bible studies in our Bible school classes. And I've had parents argue with me that they're doing the same thing again. They done this 2 years ago. Well, yeah, they're going to do it 2 years from now because they need to hear it again. You can't hear something just one time and learn it and understand it completely. So put repetition in whatever method of Bible study you use. Put repetition in it because we'll be surprised how much you will gain from the second time you read and put that into your mind. How much of it you will be able to retain. All of these things are helpful. Any questions so far? Wow, we're out of time. Suggestions for Bible study. That's what we're going to take up with next week. Okay? And each individual is different in how that works. And that's why, take these three methods of study that we've just talked about. One may work extremely well for you and the other may not. And that's what I have found. I know what works best for me and I know what my limitations are. So I stay away from my limitations and I work with the things that I can handle the best. And that's what each one of us have to determine and learn to do in our Bible study. Got a minute. Anybody got any other questions, comments? Thank you very much for your comments this morning. We may make it to the next lesson next week. I doubt it.